is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hi, this is Mihai Raducanu from Gannon Baker Basketball, and you're listening to the Hoop Heads Podcast.
Hey, Hoop Heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
We all want to win 30 games a year and win a state championship, but the things that mean the most for your everyday life and your everyday growth, sometimes I think we neglect or we don't spend enough time on.
Brad Stamps is the head boys varsity coach at his alma mater, Fayetteville High School in Arkansas. Brad's first job was coaching 8th grade basketball at Woodland Junior High, where he worked alongside his mentor and former Fayetteville High School head coach, Kyle Adams. Coach Stamps later became the head coach at Shiloh Christian, where he took a program that had won only one game the year before he arrived and turned it into a 28-game winner and state semifinalist in his final season. Brad also served as the head coach at Springdale High School, where he won 2 conference championships in 6 years and led the team to a state runner-up finish in his 5th year. Stamps has also had several stints as an assistant coach and brings a unique perspective regarding the relationships, responsibilities, and skill sets needed to succeed as both a head coach and an assistant. Throughout his entire career, Brad has built relationships with his players and fellow coaches that have enabled him to have tremendous success. Coach Stamps' basketball journey has brought him full circle back to Fayetteville High School, where he took over this past season when his mentor, Kyle Adams, retired. In this episode, Brad shares his personal growth plan, how it has impacted his life, and the amazing response he has been getting from coaches at all levels of the game. Don't miss our Hoopheads Pod webinar series with some of the top minds in the game across all levels, from grassroots to the NBA. If you're focused on improving your coaching and your team, we've got you covered. Visit hoopheadspod.com/webinars to get registered. Make sure you check out Thrive with Trevor Huffman and Beyond the Ball, 2 new podcasts from our Hoopheads Pod network. We are unbelievably excited for the content we're going to be bringing you in the weeks ahead as more of our new shows come to life. If you've ever thought of hosting your own basketball-themed podcast or a pod that covers an NBA or NCAA team, we want to hear from you about joining our great lineup of show hosts. Please take some notes and get ready to learn and grow as you listen to this episode of Brad Stamps from Fayetteville High School in the state of Arkansas. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel, and tonight we are pleased to welcome back to the podcast from Fayetteville High School in Arkansas, Brad Stamps. Brad, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Mike. It's good to be back. Glad talking to you guys again.
Absolutely. We are excited to be able to have you back on. Since we last talked to you, there's definitely been some changes. You were previously an assistant, and now you're back to being a head coach at your alma mater. And want to just give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit about what that transition was like, and just, again, describe your experiences for our audience. Maybe some coaches out there are going through something similar, and they can learn from some of the lessons that you've been able to take away.
You bet, Mike. You know, anytime you get the opportunity to, you know, to come back to your alma mater in a capacity that I did with my, and I've talked about this before, but the opportunity to come back and serve your mentor in Kyle Adams and spend those 4 years beside him learning as much as I could before he retired was special. And then the transition, you know, from going from assistant coach to him stepping away in retirement and having the opportunity to follow in his footsteps was a big deal. And it's more personal than anything that I could ever imagine talking about, just because of what he means to me. But yeah, it's been a fast and furious, I would say, since we talked last time. And, you know, it's year one with the program as a head coach and trying to make sure that, you know, you're doing everything possible to carry on a tradition that is special and that means so much to so many. Has had its challenges, but there's also been many rewards along the way.
Let's start with going backwards to what you learned over your years there as an assistant with Coach Adams. What are some things that you picked up, some things that you know you have to continue to do, things that he was great at, things that you want to continue to keep the program where it's been under his leadership?
Well, we both, you know, grew up in this system and this culture. You know, Coach Adams played for Coach Kretschmeyer. I played for Coach Kretschmeyer, a Hall of Fame coach. And so the philosophy and some of the scheme and some of those things, you know, that we got from him, there was a lot of familiarity coming back and being with Coach Adams, because a lot of those things, you know, I was doing and using at other programs that I was at along the way. And so the scheme was not difficult at all, because it was very similar as far as, you know, just the day to day, just how he carried himself, just how he, you know, had total control of the program. And just showing me and others around him, you know, what it means to lead with class and dignity and doing the right thing, never cutting corners, always making sure that, you know, we're staying on task and we're moving in the right direction. And you know, when things pop up, you deal with them and you move on. And so, those things, you know, carried more weight for me, just because I knew the scheme and I knew him, because I played in his system, number one, but we played in a system for Coach Kretschmeyer as well. So that part was easy and familiar, but just the day-to-day of how he carried himself and led a program was big for me.
I would think that with someone who's been in the community for so long like he was, and somebody who obviously have hearing you describe him now multiple times, just the way he carried himself on a day-to-day basis, I think that what I hear coming through from you is the need for you to continue to set that example for your staff, for your players, for the greater basketball community there in Fayetteville. Is that how you kind of look at it? Is you have to sort of be the public-facing person that represents the program to everybody, and it all trickles down from you?
Oh, no doubt about that, Mike. And that's such a good point. And, you know, I'm constantly checking myself. Is this something that I should be doing? Is this something that I need to do as far as promoting the program and doing all the little things outside of just the on court stuff? And, you know, whether it's a speaking engagement or whether it's being involved in something in the community, you know, I always have to look at it that way. And I know Coach Adams gets probably sick and tired of me texting him or calling him on certain occasions that pop up just for guidance on, is this something, you know, that I need to be looking into? But overall, yes, it carries great weight, and it also is a huge responsibility and something I don't take for granted.
When you first, your first day on the job, or even as you started thinking about what you were going to do with the program and how you were going to try to continue the tradition, what did you think was going to be your biggest challenge? And then as you went through the first year, did that end up being the biggest challenge, or was there something else that came up that ended up being bigger than maybe what you thought?
Yeah, Mike, the biggest challenge I think for right off the bat was, and it may not necessarily have been a challenge, but it was just, I wanted to make sure that we reached out and touched base with as many former alumni, you know, guys that I know that I played with or even before or after that, you know, for whatever reason weren't coming to games or couldn't come to games. And I wanted to touch base with them and let them know how important they are and how vital they are to be a part of our program. And so I don't know if that's a challenge or not, but it definitely was something that was, for me, day one was, making sure that I reached out and touched base with as many alumni as I possibly could. And it turned out to be a blessing to see as many new faces and guys in the stands and at our games that we did.
What did that mean to your current players when they saw the number of alums that you're able to get back and sort of bring back into the fold of the program?
Well, it's a big deal, Mike. And we talk all the time, you know, about tradition, and we talk about, you know, the guys before you kind of paved the way and for all of us, myself included. And so we made sure that we brought in guest speakers, you know, guys that had played there before, came in and spoke to our guys in a team meal, or they spoke to them, you know, after practice on maybe a Friday or a Thursday afternoon pregame for Friday's game. And to hear those guys tell stories about what Fayetteville High School meant to them, the memories they created, the big games they played in, you know, our guys were big-eyed. You know, myself and a couple of my staff, you know, they played there as well. And so we were all, you know, thrilled to have different people come in and share their stories.
Absolutely. That's a perfect time to segue into asking you about how you put together your coaching staff. And obviously you have two guys on there who are very special to you. So I'll let you go ahead and explain who those guys are, why they have such a tremendous connection to the program, and why it's so important to you to have those guys on your staff.
Yeah, you know, Nikki Bradford and Ronnie Brewer are the two that you're talking about. And, you know, they were both grew up in Fayetteville like I did, you know, grew up in the Boys and Girls Club, the Youth Center leagues, all the way through, went through the junior high and came to Fayetteville High School. And both of those guys were very successful as high school players. Ronnie Brewer ended up, you know, obviously going to Arkansas and being an impact player for the Razorbacks, and then was a lottery pick in the NBA. And you know, he played 9 years in the league. And you know, the biggest thing, Mike, with Ronnie that I respect more than anything else is all the experiences he had and the places he lived in the NBA and the different cities. He could have really, you know, set up shop anywhere in the country. He could have any place that he played at, he could have, you know, built a home or done whatever he wanted to do. But for him to come back where his roots were and set up shop here and reach out and say, "Coach, I want to get into coaching. Can you use me?" It was such a big deal for me. And personally, it means a lot. You know, Ronnie played for me as a 7th, 8th, and 9th grader with Coach Adams. And then, you know, when I moved up to the high school, I had him 10th, 11th, and 12th. And so just knowing him on a personal level and then him coming back and wanting to be a part of this special program, you know, there's a lot to be said about that. Nikki Bradford, you know, was another little older than Ronnie, graduated in 96 from Fayetteville High School. They were both Gatorade Players of the Year, by the way, in our state, Ronnie and Nikki. And Nikki went to Kansas to play for Roy Williams and then had an opportunity to go play professionally overseas, got into coaching, was coaching a couple of different junior college stops along the way and Division II, and then, you know, reached out to me when I got hired for the assistant job and wanted to come back to his alma mater in Fayetteville. And that means a lot, you know, when you've got guys that have grew up in the system, played in the system, have gone on and had their professional careers and then wanted to come back and be a part of this. And so, you know, it means a lot to our community. It means a lot to our kids, for our players to, you know, look up on the wall and see, you know, two Gatorade Players of the Year that are on their coaching staff that, you know, have done a little bit of everything in the game. It means a lot to a lot of people.
To me, the word that keeps popping into my head as you're talking about both of those guys is just humble. The fact that both of them would come back after clearly the success that they've had in the game as players. I'm sure that had they wanted to pursue other opportunities, there would have been other opportunities besides coming back to their own high school to be not the head coach, but to be an assistant coach. And to me, that just shows the connection that they feel with the program, the pride that they have in it. And I'm sure that that's something that they pass along to your kids every single day.
No, there's no question. Just the passion that they have, the just the connection with not just our kids, but even the community, because a lot of the community, you know, they grew up watching Ronnie and Nikki, and you know, to have them coaching their kids means a lot to them, and they don't hesitate on letting them know that, and that means a lot to them personally. But yeah, just you know, we call it purple pride. You know, our school colors are purple and white, and it's a big deal for us. We all have a lot of pride in our school, our community, and definitely Fayetteville basketball.
How do you divide up the responsibilities between yourself and your assistant coaches? Do you have a set formula for this coach does that, this coach does this other thing, or is it more where everybody kind of has different things they're looking out for in a particular practice or a drill? Just explain to us how you organize your staff so you can maximize what they can each bring to the table.
Yeah, no, that's good. I'm glad I got a chance to talk about that, because two guys I didn't mention that are vital to our program are our two freshman coaches. Our freshmen are a part of the high school now. They have their own freshman teams, but they're in our building. And so Jeff Bogart coaches one of them and Jordan Rose coaches the other. They've both been active in our community and coaching our junior high kids for quite some time now, and they're on our high school staff as well. And so we do have very descriptive job descriptions that, you know, we kind of talk about at the beginning of the season. We choose things that, you know, that we're strong in or maybe that we're weak in. We delegate to somebody else, but it's a collective responsibility, and we talk about that collective responsibility often. That we all want to do our part. And so, you know, I have a lot of trust in our assistant coaches. And so, you know, we give Jordan Rose and, you know, and myself, we do the offensive side of the ball right now and spend a lot of our time there. Nikki Bradford, Ronnie Brewer, and Coach Bogart, Jeff, they do a lot of the defensive stuff. And Nikki comes up with the defensive game plan as far as our matchups, and Jordan and myself, you know, talk about the offensive side. And then Tyler McCullough, who was with us, who was another Fayetteville alumni, did our film stuff this last year, and he's just recently taken a job at our junior high. So it was a great staff. And, you know, when you surround yourself with great people, number one, that are, you know, you can talk about their coaching, but great people, you surround yourself with those, they make a difference, and they cover a lot of weaknesses that I have for me, and I don't ever hesitate to let them know how valuable they are and what I value in them.
What are some things that you think that those guys on your staff bring that are areas maybe that either A, you are maybe not as strong at, or B, maybe just something about something that you don't enjoy maybe as much as somebody else does? So just kind of maybe give us where they fill in the gaps for you.
No, you know, it's, I don't want to be one of those coaches that, trying to think of the best way to say it, that maybe just takes a step aside and lets other people do everything. I do want to have a lot of control, but at the same time, like I said, it is a collective responsibility. And so, you know, Nikki, obviously defensively, he's in the all-time, you know, top 10 steals leaders at Kansas. And so, you know, his defensive fundamentals and the things that he can teach defensively matches right up with the way I want to play and the style that I want to play and that I've always wanted to play. And Jeff Bogart has done a tremendous job, and our younger kids of really, you know, talking about man-to-man defense and teaching those basic fundamental skills of defense at an early age. So when those kids get up to the high school, they know exactly where they're supposed to be on helpline and being able to guard the ball. And then, you know, Jordan Rose is, you know, offensively, he does some things with his freshman team that match up with the way I want to do things offensively. And so we spend more time, you know, talking about different ways to attack defenses and those type of things. And then Ronnie, And we laugh about this, and I've kind of on our bench this year, a lot of people would ask us, you know, you've got four of us sitting down towards the end of the bench, and then Ronnie has placed in the middle of our bench. And people ask me, why is Ronnie down there? And I said, well, Ronnie is he is our team psychologist and psychiatrist. Every time a kid comes off the floor, good, bad, indifferent, whatever it is, they go straight and sit down beside Ronnie because he's got such a good demeanor about himself, but he also is knowledgeable enough to listen and then give his, you know, his wisdom and advice to get them ready to go back in the game. And so that's a valuable valuable tool to have, and Ronnie really excels in that role.
I think that's something that coaches, a lot of times when you're thinking about what your assistants do, I think it's easy sometimes to overlook what your assistants do during a game. I think a lot of times coaches put a lot of emphasis on what their responsibilities are during practice or off the floor. And then in games, sometimes that stuff gets lost and everybody's kind of doing their own thing. And the head coach is over here and the assistants are there. And there's not necessarily a set of responsibilities. And I think that when I hear you talking about Ronnie being the psychologist and you have somebody that, you know, kind of focuses on defense and somebody else that's on offense, to me, that makes sense that that carries over from practice into a game setting where those coaches know the things that they're responsible for. And then that allows you as the head coach to focus on the things that you need to focus on in order to have your team ready to play and be prepared to win.
No question about that. When we go into a game, we all know specifically what our role is and what we're supposed to be focusing on for that game. It just makes my job a lot easier because you're not hearing, you know, all these voices maybe that you normally would, but you know it when you need an inbounds play, or you need, you know, a press offense, or you need a set to be called. You know, specifically that one-on-one conversation before the timeout or during the timeout of this is where we're going. It just makes it a lot easier to manage a game for sure.
All right, I have a question for you. This is just out of my own personal curiosity, and that is in your pregame talk and in your postgame talk, do you yourself do all the talking, or do you provide time for one of your assistants to talk, or is it a feel thing where some games an assistant might talk, other games they might not? Just explain what your pre and post game talks look like in terms of how much you're talking versus how much maybe an assistant gets an opportunity to talk.
I would say pregame, most of the time it's myself, 90% of the time. You know, I may, you know, give what I need to be said and then say, hey, Coach Bradford, or do you have anything, you know, defensively? But most of the time that's already been communicated previous to that. It's more or less just getting the guys, you know, focused and ready to go break a sweat and warm up. So most of the time that's me. Halftime, we all, the kids go into the locker room, and our staff sets out in the hallway or stands in the hallway, and we're communicating on what the numbers are. What, how many defensive rebounds or offensive rebounds we've given up, how many turnovers we have, where our shots are coming from. And then we carry those conversations into the locker room at halftime. And there may be opportunity at halftime, you know, for other staff to speak on what they see as far as offensively or defensively, but it's brief. And then after the game, post game, most of the time, or hopefully most of the time, we're running in there showing our best dance moves in celebration. That seems to be a big deal with our kids.
Absolutely. That's good. That's good stuff. Yeah. Turn it over to the kids, right? Let them dance away when you win games. Right. There's nothing better than that. All right. Let me ask you this. When you walked out on the floor for the first time as the head coach in a home game, just take us back to that moment. What did that feel like for you?
Well, you know, so many emotions for lots of reasons. One, you play at a place, and then you go away, and you come back, and you spend all those minutes, you know, in your idle time thinking about what it would be like, and you never really kind of grasp it until it's there. And I specifically remember, you know, as we talked about our, you know, our pregame speech, and I think I probably even got a little emotional for whatever reason. It just kind of hit me. It wasn't a big game or a great big game. It was just a game. But I just remember for me, just that emotion, talking to the kids, and they felt it and they knew it, and they knew a little bit about it. But and then going out, you know, in warmups, and as the national anthem's being played, and you know, our flag is placed where it's up in the rafters, and so you get to look around the arena and just seeing the faces and the people that I grew up with, and then, you know, even their parents. You saw every generation of Bulldog that was in the bleachers, and that just makes you feel really good that, you know, you're a part of something special that means something to so many people.
Were you able to verbalize that with your team at all, or was that something that you just kind of kept internal?
No, I kept internal, but they felt it, you know, and they knew, you know, it's game one at home, and, you know, their coach is getting a little emotional, so they understood why. And you know, I specifically remember a couple seniors when we were walking off the floor to the locker room. They, you know, whether it was put the arm around me or their conversations were, this one was for you type stuff. And that just makes you feel good. It, you know, they understand the magnitude of it. Make no bones about it. We talk about, you know, what tradition means and all those things. And so, we're constantly preaching about it, so they understand.
How do you go about building those relationships with the kids on your team? I know when you take over as a head coach, obviously that relationship changes to some degree from where you were as an assistant. So what was that transition like from a relationship with the player standpoint? As an assistant, you're not the guy determining their playing time. Now as a head coach, you are. So just describe for us how you handled that transition with the relationship with players.
Yeah, I think right off the bat, you know, just being open, letting them know that because the role has changed, that doesn't mean the relationship changes one bit from me to them. It might for them towards me, but you know, allowing them to voice and always having an open door policy. And we talk about a 1 minute rule where, you know, 1 minute a day or 1 minute, you know, they have to come by and stick their head in the office and just tell me something about their day or whatever it is. It doesn't have to be with anything about basketball, but the relationship is anybody that would tell you anything about me that knows me and coaching, that would be the number one thing that I think people would tell you is the relationship piece for me is by far the most important thing to me. And to me, it's the biggest thing moving forward is those special relationships with kids. And that's why I'm in this business. And I'm always, you know, talking to our players about things. And so that piece didn't change. Now, I will tell you this, that, and you know, and anybody that's been in coaching knows that a lot of times those assistant coaches, and I was there, that the parents or the kids will come to you before they'll ever come to the head coach, whether it's a complaint or playing time or something. They'll always go to that assistant coach. So I just made sure, you know, my assistant coaches understood kind of what that's going to look like. And then, you know, making sure that they were equipped with answering those questions. When you surround yourself with people that you trust and that are loyal, you don't ever worry about those things.
Yeah, to go along with that, when you're working with your staff and you're talking about strategy or you're talking about ways to handle players and the relationships and thinking about playing time and who's getting what minutes, maybe just talk about a little bit about what your process is like behind closed doors. And then once you leave that coach's office, getting on the same page so that everybody is putting the same message out there to your basketball community. What does that process look like for your staff?
As far as the individual playing time?
Just in terms of you and your coaches behind closed doors talking things out. Maybe there's
something that you disagree about on, could be on offense, defense, amount, the amount of time a kid plays. Maybe it's even during a tryout situation where you're trying to decide which of these two kids you keep. Just talk a little bit about what that process looks like behind closed doors, and then what you do to make sure that everybody comes out with a unified front when you leave the coach's office.
Yeah, that's number one with our staff is we're going to have differences. We're going to have difference of opinions, and we are constantly challenging each other. And I think that's a great staff. That's what you do. I won't claim that I have all the answers, and I don't think any of my staff would either, but we have many of those sessions behind closed doors of a depth chart preseason of who's placed where. We have, conversations about maybe how we want to guard the other team's best player. We have all those conversations, and they do take place behind closed doors. And even though they may get, I wouldn't say heated, but they get a heavy debate sometimes, at the end of the day and before we take the floor, we're always unified, and we've always, I feel like we've made the best decisions as a staff. Our players will never see us, and that we pride ourselves on this, because I think this is such a big deal. Our players will never, ever see us in any capacity challenge each other in front of them in a practice or at a game. I don't think that's healthy. I don't think that that's good. And so, we make sure that they don't see that. A lot of our things are going to be handled behind closed doors. And when we leave that, the importance is the trust and the honesty and being transparent with each other.
Coaches, we've teamed up with E3 Analytics so you can now purchase 3 of their exclusive new playbooks. If you're looking for ways to improve your team next season, these playbooks blend affordability with the quality content that serious coaches are looking for. Just visit hoopheadspod.com/store and you'll find playbooks from Coach Don Showalter of USA Basketball, Coach Mike Flynn from the Illawarra Hawks in Australia, who coached LaMelo Ball last season, and Coach Tyler Whitcomb from West Michigan Aviation Academy. Check out these great resources at hoopheadspod.com/store. So to build on that and thinking about how you go about putting together your daily practice plan, what is the process for you when you sit down and it's a Wednesday and you got to plan Thursday's practice? So it's Wednesday night and you got to get ready for practice on Thursday. What does that look like? How are you going about doing it? Are you getting input from all the assistants? Are you creating the plan first and then going to them? Where are you doing it? When are you doing it? Just talk a little bit about your practice planning.
Yeah, practice planning is such a big important part of what we do, and we want to be prepared. We want to plan well. And so, yes, I'm highly involved in the majority of the practice planning. But like I told you before, we've got certain individuals that are doing different things. And so I may go to Coach Bradford and to Nikki and say, hey, what do we need to do defensively? What do you want defensively tomorrow? How much time do you need for defense to get, maybe what he's thinking? And then I'll go to Jordan and say, okay, what do we need to install? Do we need to, spend more time on this or that offensively? And then I spend time in my office scripting out a practice plan, and then I'll send it as a blanket email to all of them, specifically, saying, hey, here's tomorrow's plan. They always get it either the morning of for the afternoon, or they'll get it the night before of what we're specifically going to do. And it's pretty descriptive as far as, the time, because we have managers in our program that run the clock during our practice. I'm big on, operating off a script, but also having time management and making sure that, we're on pace during our practice. And so our manager set at the scores table, and they specifically know which session has 10, 15 minutes or whatever. And that's kind of how we manage it.
What's your philosophy on if you have, let's say, 10 minutes budgeted for a particular drill, but you're not quite getting what you want to get out of it? and you get to that 10 minutes, do you cut it off at that point and just say, boy, today's not our day with that particular thing and we need to move on to the next thing? Or do you say, okay, we're just going to, excuse me, run that over a little bit to make sure that we're getting down the things that we need to get done?
If I feel like it's of great importance, something that if we're specifically game planning for somebody, as far as in season, and I feel like we really need to get it, then yes, we'll spend more time trying to get it right before we leave that day. And that may mean cutting something else out of the practice plan. But for the most part, we try to stay on task as far as what that script says.
How much time would you say comparatively do you spend on individual player development? You could define that however you want to define it, versus team stuff that you're actually going to be trying to execute in a game. How do you strike that balance? Does it vary at different points in the season? Just talk a little bit about your philosophy in terms of balancing those two things together.
Yeah, I think it does vary as far as time of the year. You know, our preseason, we look at August, and when we get back in school is what I'm talking about. But August, September have always been conditioning and weights and skill work. That's it. We don't do any team stuff. We may put in transition offense because we get conditioning out of that too. But as far as, you know, what it looks like for them is they're going to get 3 days of weights, and then they're going to get conditioning and individual skill work. Once we get into October, as you know, as a basketball coach, when the calendar turns October, it just seems like it's time. And so we spend the whole month of October installing, putting in our offensive stuff, talking defense, but we still allow lots of times. We have what we call a post-perimeter split, where a couple of our staff will take the guards on one end, a couple of our staff will take the post, the 4 and 5 men on the other end, and we'll do post-perimeter split where we're getting individual skill stuff in smaller groups, and we do that every day. You know, and whatever specifically we want to try to get out of that time, we always put that in the practice plan. And so I would say once we get into October, November, when we're playing games, especially in November, we spend a lot of time on skill work and film study as well. We cut the weights back to maybe 2 days a week just to maintain. And then, you know, throughout our season, November, December, January, February, we're pretty much on a routine as far as, you know, Monday we're getting ready for Tuesday. Tuesday night's a game. Wednesday we come in and we stretch out our bodies and lift and watch some film and shoot a lot. And then Thursday we're prepping for Friday's game. We don't come in on Saturdays at all. We come in on Sunday afternoons late, and all we do on Sunday afternoons is watch film, lift weights, and shoot. And so that's kind of our plan once we get into the season.
Does the length of time that each practice lasts go down as the season goes along?
Yes. Yes, it does. And I just believe, you know, and I know there are the coaches, you know, they differ and they want to stay longer and do some things. And I get that. I'm not saying one way is right or wrong, but I just feel like in order to stay fresh, because it's such a long season, in order to stay fresh in January and February and peak at the right time, your kids have got to be, their bodies, their mind, have all got to be right. And so we try to get in and get out, and whatever that looks like, you know, we cut practice back quite a bit, and we want to make sure that while we're there and what we're doing is meaningful work, where we're getting what we need to get done. And I don't see the use of just keeping them there to keep going whenever things are going the way we need them to.
All right. This is a two-part question related to that answer. First part of the question is specific to that piece of it in terms of the time of practice. Has your philosophy on that changed from when your career first started? So in other words, back when you first started, were you more of the mindset of we need to have longer practices all throughout the season? And then the second part of that question is, what are some things that you do differently in this time around as a head coach than maybe you did in your first stint as a head coach, if there's anything?
Yeah, the first one, as far as, yes, I think, you know, when we're all green and getting into the business, we feel like, and I'll just tell you, I wasn't when I first started, even though I was coaching with my mentor, Coach Adams, my first job, I wasn't highly involved in the practice planning part of it. But what I was involved with was, you know, staying after and maybe shooting or doing some stuff with kids. And so you felt like you were there forever. I mean, you really did. But it was, you know, it was something that you just felt like that's what you do. When a kid wants in a gym or a kid wants extra shots, you're going to be there for him. And so, yeah, I would say we probably stayed longer 15, 20 years ago, but, you know, now I think it's just sometimes you feel like, are we doing the same things over and over? So you try to be creative, you try to be new, you try to bring something fresh, and you try to keep your players fresh. I think it's a big deal. And then the second part of the question, you know, I think that the first as being a head coach for those 10 years, four at Shiloh, six at Springdale High, I think, you know, every year you try to evolve. And like I told you earlier, when you feel like you don't have all the answers. I heard Kevin Eastman say this the other day, and I agree with it. And it may be a Don Meyer quote, but where, you know, be a learn-it-all, not a know-it-all. And I think that's such a big deal that we're constantly trying to evolve and trying to figure out new ways of doing things to where, you know, to be honest with you, you know, when you get older in coaching, you want new things, you want fresh things, you want to be able to teach new things. So I think, you know, it's a constant learning cycle for me.
All right. So that's a great way to ask the following question, which is, how do you, as a head coach, someone who obviously has a lot of experience, has been successful both as a head coach and has been an assistant in several different programs, how do you go about learning those new things? How do you go about finding things that you want to add to your arsenal of what you do as a head coach? Where do you go? What are your sources? Who are the people that you go to be able to help you to grow as a coach?
Yeah, before I get into, you know, talking about just some personal things that I've done, you know, during this coronavirus, you know, in the past, there's always people that you can reach out to, whether they're guys that have been in the business for years that are retired now. And I've got a collection of those people that are resources for me. You know, I talk about Coach Adams, but there's others in our region that mean a lot to me personally, because they were coaching when I played and then they were coaching against me when I first got into coaching. And so you always have a resource group of people that you can go to. But, you know, there's so many resources out there now, you know, whether it's online or whatever it is, where you can always find something that maybe you haven't been doing, that maybe somebody does it maybe a different way or even a better way. And so, you know, it's always a challenge to try to find something new to bring to the table.
So you mentioned what you've been able to do during this time where we're all obviously away from the basketball floor. And in many places, we're just starting to bring players back for individual workouts. But we've had 2 months of time to just sit and be able to reflect and think. So tell our audience about what you've been able to create that has helped you with your own personal growth and how you've been able to spread that message to other people who are looking for that same opportunity to grow as both a human being and as a coach.
Yeah, Mike, I always like talking about these type of things because I think growth is such a big deal and not getting stagnant. And so, as any coach would do, our season ended, Mike, in the semifinals on a Saturday. And then 5 days later or 4 days later, you know, we're at home, you know, we're shut down and we're quarantined and this coronavirus hits. And so the reflection, as we normally have, was a little different because you weren't, you know, in the same routine and things going on. And so The slowdown for me and being shut down just gave me a lot of time, really, to reflect on year one of being back at my alma mater and, you know, what were the high points, what were the low points in that reflection piece, whether it was the big wins, the tough losses, dealing with discipline issues, the day-to-day structure, were we doing things we needed to be doing, was the communication with my admin or our players or our parents, was it solid? And as I got into that and started writing everything I could think of in those areas, Mike, it turned into more than that. It turned into, you know, how I wanted to become better in all areas of my life. And so as I started writing and really digging down deep into this reflection, you know, I came up with, you know, four different areas and for personal growth. And that's all it was just my own personal growth plan. And I wanted to get better mentally. I wanted to get better physically. I wanted to get better professionally, and I wanted to get better spiritually. And so I kind of put a plan together for that, and it was all intended for myself to grow. And as I started really, you know, seeing things and really being intentional about a daily script of touching something in all four of those areas, I put a presentation together and shared it with my staff, and I used it as a challenge to, you know, we can do a lot of things right now while we're in quarantine time, but if we're not spending time getting better for our players and professionally, but more than anything else, personally, if we're not growing, we're not going to be at our best when we come out of this. And so I put a presentation together called Reflect and Reset, and I've had the opportunity, Mike, which has been pretty special, to share with other high school staffs across the state and even the region. And then I've had an opportunity to share with a couple of college staffs. And I'm really proud of it, not because that was my intention to begin with. Like I told you before, it was all intended for my own personal growth. But what I've seen after sharing it with different people is the thing sometimes we take for granted. You know, we all want to, you know, win 30 games a year and win a state championship, but the things that mean the most for your everyday life and your everyday growth, sometimes I think we neglect or we don't spend enough time on. And maybe we're strong in one area, then we're weak in another. And so being intentional about putting a daily script together of, I want to get better mentally today. What do I have to do? Does that mean I have to read, you know, which I've spent a lot of time reading, a book every 2 weeks, blogs, really digging down deep into some things. And then, you know, my morning walks, am I making sure that, you know, I'm getting exercise? And then the biggest thing, Mike, that I've seen that's been more powerful than anything else in the writing portion of it, as far as the mental breakdown, is writing letters, you know, to former players, guys that played for me years ago, or just people that are influential in my life, and being able to journal and highlight some things. And you know, Mike, when you get something in the mail that you don't expect to get, and it's from somebody, and you can encourage or you can lift somebody else up, and it's something they didn't expect, and you took the time to handwrite a letter to somebody, I think there's so much power in that, and that can be such an encouragement to somebody. And so I just feel like, you know, this personal growth is taken off, and it's really been a big deal for me.
All right, so two things. One, I want to share just a personal story related to what you were talking about. And then I want to ask you a little bit about the process that you use to be able to help people with their personal growth. So my own personal story is, during this time, I had the good fortune of first being reconnected with one of the assistant coaches from back when I played at Kent State back in from 88 to 92. And I hadn't had a conversation with that assistant coach probably, I may have talked to him once or twice after I graduated, you know, in the intervening year or two. He took over the head job after I left, and I'm sure I spoke to him at some point during that time, but hadn't talked to him before then. He came on the podcast, got a chance to have an hour conversation with him outside of the podcast, and then had him on the podcast for like an hour and a half. It was just a tremendous opportunity to be able to reconnect with him. Then he connected me to another assistant coach who was only with the program for a year, then moved on to the University of Michigan, and then he was the head coach at Central Michigan, and now he's back on the University of Michigan staff. But I got an opportunity to have a conversation with him, and then he's going to be on the podcast soon. I only talked to him for probably 15 or 20 minutes, not as long as, unfortunately, as I was able to talk to our other assistant. And then that assistant coach connected me back to my head coach, who was a tremendous head coach for me as a player, but he was a very stern disciplinarian, definitely an old school coach, especially at that time. I don't feel like in the moment that you had a tremendous personal relationship, it didn't feel like. And yet it was somebody that, again, I thought of him often, but just never had the number, never picked up the phone, never really did any investigating to go back and find him. And I think coach is now probably, he's got to be in his mid-80s, and called him up like 2 days ago and talked to him for an hour and a half. And the things that he remembered about me and my family especially were stunning to me. Like, he asked me about my sister, and he asked me if my dad was still doing this, and if he remembered a time where he saw my parents before a game at the University of Toledo, and he introduced them to the former coach's wife at Toledo, and just all these things that he remembered about the opportunity to coach me. And when we got done with the conversation, as we were hanging up the phone, he's like, "You really made my day. This was just tremendous." And I think about that.
That's awesome.
And it was fantastic for me. I mean, it was just an unbelievable conversation for me to be able to have with all those guys. And then specifically for someone who's, you know, in his mid-80s, he just recently lost his wife, and to be able to reconnect with him and have that kind of genuine conversation, it meant a lot to me, because I think one of the things that I've said here on the show before is that I look back on my time playing college basketball, and part of me wishes and thinks that those relationships, especially in the moment, I didn't necessarily feel that type of personal connection with my coaches always. And to be able to reconnect with them at this point in my life was just, it was powerful. And I think what you're talking about, just by going back and reaching out to your former players and having those conversations, I can attest to the power of what that means to the people on both sides of that conversation. So I couldn't agree with you more there. And then my next question for you is, when you start talking about sharing what your personal growth plan was, when you're sharing with another coach or with another person, are you sharing specific things that they should do, or are you sharing more of questions or sort of a framework for what they can be thinking about? So in other words, do you tell them, hey, you should take a 15-minute walk every day, or are you saying you should find 15 minutes in your day to reflect upon this? What's the approach when you're talking to other people?
No, and that's a great question. And so when I put it together and wanted to share it with my staff before anybody else, it turned out to be more of a challenge to my staff. Is, you know, here's some growth areas for me personally, but you know, I didn't want to, and I made sure, and I still make sure that every time I present this, that people understand that, you know, I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And that's why I put this together, because I needed to grow in these four areas. And so when I put it together, that's I made sure of that. And so, you know, it was a challenge for my staff. When I share it with other people, it's, Here is four areas that all of us, you know, in some form or fashion deal with, and how can you grow in these areas? And maybe something that I give you, or maybe something that I show you that I'm doing personally that has worked for me, maybe you can get a piece or two out of it. And if you do, then that's success. And so the feedback and the response from people that I've shared this with, you know, Mike, I'll just tell you, is it just makes your heart feel good that, you know, you feel like you've put something together that somebody else is benefiting from, or maybe it's helping them. That to me, that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. That's a powerful thing. So let me ask you, let's say that I come to you, or I'm hearing your presentation, and I raise my hand and I say, "Coach Stamps, I want to know a little bit about what I can do to improve myself. Let me just pick one of the categories, mentally. I want to improve mentally. What are some suggestions or things that you decided you were going to do during this time to improve yourself mentally?"
Yeah, and I talked a little bit about it. You know, I try to read more. I've read more in the last 2 months than I ever read in any time when I was in school. And then I highlight those, and I've been writing. I've been looking for anything to read. You know, music's a big deal to me, and I always have music. I'm pretty well-rounded when it comes to music. And so I'm fortunate that I live on 7 acres, and so I walk a lot. And when I'm walking, I usually have music in. I'm listening to podcasts or I'm listening to music. I talked about the writing part. Being able to journal, I think, is such a big deal. But I think the biggest thing, Mike, mentally, and I just shared this with Coach Neighbors and a couple of other people this last week, was something new for me that I don't think any of us do enough of, this is meditation. You know, and I call that me time, Mike, where it's just you. There's nobody else around. There's no interruptions. There's no distractions. There's nothing going on except for just you and your thoughts. Whether it's 15, 20 minutes, 25 minutes, whatever that is, I think that's such a big part, of your daily success. And so I've spent more time in meditation than ever before.
Mentally. All right. So I have two questions related to meditation, because I've read a lot of things about it. I've done some laying in my bed at night before I fall asleep, which usually isn't very long, trying to think about it. But I have not yet gotten myself to carve out the time to actually sit down in a space by myself and meditate. I just haven't carved that out. And so...
And Mike, I don't think any of us do. And I think that's, when I say growth, that's something new for me. And I don't think any of us, you know, the people that I've talked to when I've shared that, I don't think any of us spend enough time that we should in just meaningful thought, something meaningful. I think it's such a big deal.
So what does your process look like for doing that? Was when you sit down to do it for the very first time, what are you thinking about? How are you setting it up? What does it look like for you right now? Because again, I think everybody has a different idea of what it looks like and how it might be beneficial to them. Like, I know I've done the Headspace app at times with my wife and my kids. We had a stretch where we were doing it a little bit and sitting down. And of course, that was during the school year. And as my kids will tell you, I'm notorious for, anytime my mind shuts down and I'm not actively doing something, chances are I'm asleep like 2 minutes later. So I would find myself, I would find myself meditating, and everybody else would be done and they'd be tapping me on the shoulder. Dad, wake up. We're all done. So just tell me a little bit about your process.
Yeah. You know, I think it would be different for anybody, but I think finding a specific place in your home, somewhere you can go where you're not going to be distracted. For me, it's pretty simple. My wife is blessed. She gets to work from home, and she's got an office set up upstairs, and I've kind of taken over our basement area during this quarantine time. And, you know, and so I go down there and, you know, when I start my day with my quiet time or just some things that I've got as far as my daily script of making sure I'm prioritizing things for the day. Before I do any of that, I just spend quality time, and, you know, sometimes it's 10 minutes, sometimes it's 20, but just really getting in a spot, down here, downstairs with nothing else going on, no cell phones, nothing else, just me and my thoughts.
Okay. So here's my next question. When we're thinking about this now during the time where our schedules have obviously relax, and I've done the same thing that you have to a certain degree, and I'm sure most people have, is just, there's been a time for us to reflect, think about, our schedule slows down. There's just more time to stop and smell the roses, for lack of a better way of saying it. So when you start thinking about continuing the things that you've been able to do now, where your schedule is more relaxed, open, you're not necessarily running from one thing to the next, how do you anticipate being able to continue all the different practices that you've now put into place once your schedule goes back to being more full like it normally would be?
No, and that is a challenge, and I see that coming. I think it's being intentional about When I talk about a daily script, Mike, it is completely 100% a priority list for me. And, you know, I try to put things that matter the most for that specific day. And so I don't envision myself losing that daily script, you know, and being able to do everything I need to do in that day. That may mean I need to get up earlier in the morning to be able to accomplish the things that I want to do. And when I share with our staff that this personal growth plan that I put together, this isn't a New Year's resolution. It isn't something that I'm just putting down because we have the time and I'm going to spend time for 2 weeks and then I'm done with it. It's a way of life that I want to really adapt to and that I really want to live up to. Now, I'm going to fail. I'm not perfect. I'm going to fail at it. There's going to be days where I just don't feel like, you know, maybe hitting the physical part of it or something. But I just feel like, you know, being intentional about, you know, hitting those areas, I don't think are going to change for me, and I don't envision them changing because right now it's maybe a feel good time. I've never felt better in all aspects, and just in a good place with all the crud and all the stuff that's going on all over the country, and you know you can get locked into that stuff, and that stuff can take you a different direction. But I think being able to really stress what's important, prioritizing things, putting things in proper perspective, is such a big deal.
I agree with you 100%. I think that this time for me especially has been taking my day-to-day. I have a long commute every day to get to my school, taking that out of the mix and allowing me to spend more time at home with the family, and then conversely also having more time to be able to stop and think and reflect has been really powerful. When you talk about a daily script, I'm assuming that that's something you're writing out, correct?
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, and what I told you earlier is, you know, prioritizing that, doing the things that are going to make a difference, you know, daily action steps. And, you know, you focus on the priorities, and then I try to implement something every day, you know, because every day, you know, just provides you an opportunity, Mike, to produce something wherein the results matter, because they do. And then reflect on whatever those results were, reflect on those. And maybe, and this is a big deal, is seeking feedback. When you put something into something, you want to make sure it has value. And so, you know, learn from experience requires feedback, and, you know, maybe reaching out to the people, like you said earlier, that you respect. But not only the people you respect, Mike, it's also the people that are going to tell you the truth. They're going to share with you, you know, the truth, and then being able to apply that, look for opportunities, you know, to use that new knowledge or those new skills. So, you know, as far as a daily script, that's kind of where we're at.
Do you put that together the night before for the next day, or do you get up and write that first thing in the morning?
A little of both. I've caught myself, you know, if it was a long day and things that are going on, you know, I may shut it down and then get up first thing in the morning and start that. But the writing part, I'm writing everything. I mean, I've got, golly, I'm like a mad scientist down here. I've got papers everywhere of just everything I see, everything I read. I'm just writing it down, and then learning how to organize those, you know, is a big deal for me as well as far as growth. But Mike, I'll tell you, you know, the growth part, and you can talk about all those areas, mental, physically, professionally, spiritually, you know, because I needed to get better in all those, but I think the biggest thing right now for me and maybe for others, because people have reached out to me when I shared with removing clutter, whatever that clutter is, remove it from your life, remove it from you. Some of it may be resentment towards something that has control over you, or maybe it's just being able to forgive somebody and being intentional about making things right with them. I had the opportunity to do that, you know, a couple of months ago, and just what that does as far as just releasing that and releasing that control, because it can really have control over you if you're carrying those things around. So removing that clutter is growth. Eliminate those things that distract you from being your best.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I'm going to recommend a book to you. I don't know if you've ever read this book or not, but for anybody who's out there listening, if you haven't read it and you, what Brad and I are talking about tonight resonates with you, the book's called Willpower Doesn't Work by Benjamin Hardy. Have you ever read that book, Brad?
I have not, but I'm writing it down as you're talking.
You would love it.
Just tell me that one more time.
Willpower Doesn't Work. And okay. It's by Benjamin Hardy. And it is a tremendous book. It goes into a lot of the things that you're talking about in terms of journaling, in terms of decluttering, in terms of prioritizing. And it's very simply written. It's a quick read. I've read it, I think, 3 times now since I got the book. I've tried to read it every 6 months just because I think it's that powerful of a message that, and I know you've used the word a bunch of times tonight, and I've used it a lot in the past, and that is the word intentional. And what I find for me is that I have to be intentional about doing all the things that you've described, because I find it very, very easy to fall off the wagon and get caught up in the day-to-day tasks that I feel like I need to get done rather than prioritizing what's really and truly important. And that book does a great job of helping kind of to recenter me and remind me of what are the things that I need to be doing day to day to truly be at my best and to be at my most productive. And it sounds like what you've been able to put together does the same thing for you. And I think the key to any of this for anyone who's out there listening, coach or otherwise, is to think about all the things that you and I have been discussing tonight and then find a system that works for you. And it could be the system, Brad, that you've created. It could be a system that somebody's read about in a book. It could be a system that they've created for themselves. But I think what's really important is you take that framework that you've gotten from somebody else or that you've put together for yourself, and then you fill it in with the things that have the most meaning for you in your life. And it sounds like to me, been the most important thing for you has been the writing piece of it.
It has, being able to, because for me, when I see it and then I write it down, it really sticks, and so I'm ready to put all those into, whether it's a 3-ring binder called Coronavirus Summer or whatever it is, because there's a lot of stuff that I've written down that may not mean a whole lot to me 5 years from now, but there's a lot of meaningful stuff in there too that I want to keep. And so, that's a big deal. And, it's also, Mike, I shared with our staff when I got through with it was, growth is also being able to count your blessings. I mean, most of us are relatively healthy. We have awesome families. But I think the biggest thing, Mike, is we've got jobs. And I'm talking about coaches. We've got jobs that not only we're getting a paycheck right now, and many in the country are not.
Absolutely.
And many people are struggling. We got a job that gives us a paycheck, but it also allows us to lead and inspire young people. So, I mean, what kind of blessing is that? Being able to really dive into how blessed we are to get to do what we're doing.
I don't think there's any doubt that having that gratitude every single day, and I've had many conversations during this time of the quarantine with people, and I've said that just like you, I feel like this time has been extremely valuable to me as a human being. And I know that it's going to continue to have an impact on me long after this time is done, just because some of the things that I've done during this time to grow and improve and think and figure out what it is that's important to me and what I want to do and where I want to move forward. And so there's no doubt that that's going to stick with me. And yet when I talk to people, I always preface it with what you just said, which is, I understand that I am incredibly, incredibly fortunate to be in a job where I'm not going to work every day, and yet every 2 weeks, a paycheck is still finding its way into my mailbox. And believe me when I say I don't take that for granted. And certainly if I was an hourly worker whose job had been shut down and suddenly wasn't getting paid or was on unemployment, my outlook on this time probably would be a lot different. I'd probably find it much more difficult to do the things that you and I have been talking about tonight. And yet, I think that whether your life is in a great place or whether your life is in a spot where it's a challenge, I think by taking on some of the self-improvement stuff that we've talked about tonight, anybody's life can be improved if you go about it and you have the right positive spirit despite what your situation may be. And that's, again, taking into account the fact that I know, as you described, that we are incredibly lucky to be doing what we do and be in the situation that we're in.
No, I think so, Mike, and that's well said. And I think we all have the ability to be a light to somebody else, and whatever your platform is, you know, especially in today's world, is because we've spent a lot of time with our players the last couple of days of just talking about things that are going on in our country, you know, and so that's a blessing in itself as well, as being able to have those relationships, one, but having your players understand that, you know, you're not just concerned about, you know, getting them ready to play basketball games. You're trying to prepare them for life, and having an open relationship where you can listen. And I think listening is such a valuable tool, to be able to just sit and listen, because everybody's got a story and everybody's story is valuable. And so I think that's something right now that we can all be.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there. I think that a lot of times, especially in our country, in today's society with social media and whatever, we spend a lot of time talking, sharing, putting things out there, but we don't always spend a lot of time listening to all sides of an issue, a debate. And clearly, I think when you talk about a coach-player relationship, it's so important for a coach to be able to have difficult conversations with players about things that are going on in the world, because that's the real world. We can all live in our basketball world, and within our basketball team, we all know how important that is to us and how caught up we get in it when the season's on and we're in the middle of a game and all those things. And yet, you've said it a couple times tonight that ultimately what it comes down to is, 20 years from now, are you going to be able to pick up the phone and have a conversation with one of your players who's had a successful life and raised a family and done good things in the community? And that's really where you find out about yourself as a coach and what kind of impact you've had. You don't necessarily find that out in the minutes during the season. You find it out much later when those players stay connected to you and you're able to develop those relationships. And I think that's so, so important. And
without a doubt,
I want to ask you about how you went from creating this for yourself, and obviously you had in mind as you started putting it together that you wanted to share it with your staff. So how do you go from I'm doing it for me to I'm going to share this with my staff to now I'm going to get an opportunity to share it with people outside of my immediate circle? How did that come to pass?
Yeah, well, you know, and that's another area of growth, the professional component as far as networking with people. You know, during this time, whether it's Zooms, which I've done several of those, and I didn't get into any of that with you, but I've done some special Zooms that I'm extremely proud of. I did one for Coach Sutton. Eddie Sutton was a big fixture for me, and his family is very close with me, and I got an opportunity to pull in, you know, the triplets as far as former players of his, and Coach Sutton was actually sitting in the room in his recliner a couple months before he passed, right after the Hall of Fame. And so networking with individuals, it started that way. You know, I had the College of Charleston, Coach Earl Grant, who's an awesome man, an awesome coach, on a Zoom with my staff doing a professional development. We talked basketball, we talked life, and then during that conversation, Mike, he shared with me in the middle of it that, you know, I just want you guys to know that I just got through challenging my staff here in professional and personal growth plan. And he started talking about the areas, and I could feel every eye in my staff on that Zoom looking at me. And all of a sudden my phone's going off and they're texting me saying, Coach, did you talk to him beforehand? Because this is exactly what you just shared with us. And so when it was over with, you know, and I don't think that's coincidence, Mike. I don't. And so when it was over with, I called Coach Grant and said, you know, when you were talking about that, Coach, my staff was blowing me up because I just got through sharing. He said, well, tell me what you got. And so I shared that with him. And when he told me, when I shared the presentation, when I shared it with him, he told me, he said, Coach, he said, every coach in the country is trying to get you know, X's and O's, or trying to gain an advantage, or doing all these things. He said, but what you just shared with me, every staff in America needs to hear in some capacity. He said, because that's the true gist of who we are and what we need to be at our best. And so when he shared that with me, it just gave me great confidence that, you know, it wasn't just, you know, and it's not a, like I told you before, it's not a perfect deal. It's not, I'm not perfect. I'm not anywhere close. I'm weak in so many areas, but I think really doing a self-assessment or being transparent with yourself, an honest assessment of looking at areas where you need to grow and then making sure you're being intentional about growing, it led to, you know, him sharing the message with other coaches. I'm on a Thursday Zoom with several college coaches, as well as some of my high school friends that Coach Greg White, you know, my former assistant and head coach of Bentonville West that you know really well, put together, and with Coach Neighbors. And so I've got to share with them. And then our high school coaches in the state have a group on Mondays, and I got to share, you know, with those guys as well. And when I tell you, feedback has been tremendous. You know, it's, that's what it's all about.
Sounds like you're going to be a corporate speaker soon, Brad.
No, I don't want to do that at all. And like I told you before, Mike, it, and I truly, yep. I mean this with every inch of my being, is this wasn't intended for anybody else but myself. And it's just, you know, and I'll get into this a little bit. You know, I'm a man of faith. And so when I'd start digging into the spiritual side of my personal growth, you know, and drawing near to God and those type of things, it just, all these things start taking place. And I don't think that's coincidence. I don't. And, so it's, that's been a big component for me and things that I've seen because of that.
It is amazing that sometimes things just seem to happen for a reason. And you start out with one direction and thinking that you're going to be doing this. And then suddenly you get connected to this person and that person. And then before you know it, you have an opportunity to do something that you never really imagined. And I think from Jason and I's perspective, the podcast has certainly been like that. And we've kind of talked about the genesis of the show before, but we started out, this podcast was going to be a show about youth sports parenting and talking about different issues that youth sports parents face and just how to navigate maybe the youth basketball system. And then through our good fortune, we got connected to Alan Stein. We got connected to Greg White, who you mentioned just a second ago, who's become a good friend. And the both of those guys were kind enough to open their network to us. And then once you have their networks opened, and then you get connected to the people within their network, and they feel like you're on the up and up with them, and that you're doing a good job, and you're trying to grow the game and do things to help people. And before you know it, you're just connected to a list of people that I could have never imagined when we started this thing a little over 2 years ago, that we'd be sitting here having done 300 and whatever, 20 episodes or whatever it'll be that we're recording with you tonight. It's just amazing. And I think, as you said, those things happen for a reason. They don't happen by accident. And for whatever reason, we've been put in this position to be able to share and help grow the game and give people like yourself who are doing great things, not only for the game of basketball, but just for people in general, to give them a platform to be able to share the things that they want to share to help make everybody better. And to me, that's really, that's what it's been all about. It sounds like that's sort of the same mission that you're on as well.
Yeah, for sure, Mike. It's, you mentioned Grow the Game, and you mentioned Greg White, and Greg is, you know, he's one of those guys that, you know, he never sleeps, and, you know, he's always up to something. And so, you know, he's challenged me in some areas as far as growing the game. And so, you know, he's opened up some doors for me as far as that goes. And I can't thank him enough for that. And, you know, because it's people that, you know, I never envisioned, maybe being able to reach out to and talk to and communicate with and learn from. And if we're not growing the game, you know, what are we doing? And so it's a game that, You know, besides the fact that it's the greatest game ever invented, it's also a game that's given all of us so many memories. It's given us so many opportunities, relationships, special relationships that are deep-rooted in that. It's given us competition, but it's given us so much. And so why wouldn't we want to give back as much as it's given us?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. Brad, we're coming up on, I don't know, an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes. Want to give you a chance to let people know where they can reach out to you if they're interested in finding out more about your personal growth plan, or if they're interested in finding out more about what you're doing at Fayetteville. And then if there's any final point that we didn't get a chance to talk about, you can go ahead and do that. And then I'll jump back in and wrap up the episode.
Yeah, for sure, Mike. And once again, I do appreciate you allowing me to come on today. It's always fun talking with you. You do a tremendous job, and I applaud you for what you're doing to help promote the game as well. But there's a couple of ways to get in touch with me. One, you know, you can follow me personally on social media, on Twitter at bstamps22. And then our Fayetteville basketball account is at Fay, F-A-Y, and then Bulldogs Basketball. That's at Fay Bulldogs Basketball is our basketball Twitter account that my assistants, you know, they run that. And then my email is brad.stamps@fayar.net. That's F-A-Y-A-R.net. And I would love an opportunity, you know, if anybody's interested to that's listening, would love to share the Reflect and Reset presentation with them.
Absolutely. Brad, we cannot thank you enough for spending some time, taking the time out of your schedule to come on with us again for a second time. I thought this conversation was fascinating from my end of it. These are things that are near and dear to my heart that I love talking about. And I know that coaches out there, there's a ton of things that they could take away, both from your experience going from an assistant to the head coach at your alma mater, following in the footsteps of your mentor and a guy who was a legend in the community, and then going beyond that and creating the personal growth plan and sharing some aspects of that and how it's impacted you and how it can hopefully impact other coaches out there. It's just been a tremendous conversation with a ton of value, so we can't thank you enough. And to everyone out there, thanks for checking us out, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.